Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
And the winner is Bobby Cannavale.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 6 for the week of September 23rd, 2013. I am Cavalcade of Death, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Deep Focus Reaction, Joe Reed.
Hi, see you, Heidi Klum.
Awkward Red Carpet Interview, Sarah D. Bunting.
This is Vintage Versace.
And Furious Loser, Tara Ariano.
Congratulations!
Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode of Extra Hot Great, day after Emmys. Are we all recuperated?
We're all hung the fuck over after the Emmys, I would say. If not on alcohol, then on just fury.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Rage.
It seemed like an especially furious Emmy reaction for like all sorts of different reasons, really, from the weirdly paced death montages
to can we talk
not even
about
montages.
That?
The lack of montages made people mad.
It was, but I mean, whose decision was it to meter out the sadness in such, you know, with such regularity? It was just like, it was 10 minutes.
It feels
minutes.
Like there was one meeting where somebody just sat down and was like, God, a lot of people died this year. What could we make of that? Like,
I sort of liked that, and I said this in our chat, I sort of liked that they tried to do something different and have the eulogies, but the problem is that the people who give the eulogies knew these people personally, and while, you know, Edie Falco was having a moment, which was sort of beautiful on this emotional level, viewers don't respond to these actors and cultural figures in that same way, so it's a little weird. And also, I know they're always trying to find a way where it's going to be quote-unquote fair, and everyone's invited to the pool party, and everyone gets the same amount of applause, but it's not realistic.
Yeah.
Viz, Jack Klugman's kid complaining that
what
Randolph
if during
Mantooth
those things, they let everybody clap, and then they had a applause meter at the bottom. That would be awesome.
Or what if they just find some way in, like, 7-second post to make all the applause the same?
Make
all the applause the same.
Just level it out. Like,
if we're going to be Special Olympics about it, just find a way to do it or mute the applause like they do at the Oscars.
Yeah, because I know
they do that now?
Sometimes they do that at the Oscars,
I feel like at other award shows they've tried to do something where it's like, no, don't clap until the very end, but people can't help themselves.
Well, right, and I think at some point you're getting into, like, sort of wagging your finger at people for, like, their reactions to people that died, and, like, I can see why they wouldn't want to do it that way. The problem that I had was it really was just sort of like every 20 minutes a reminder that, like, it was this really sort of super sad year, particularly when it was like Gandolfini and Cory Monteith, who were untimely deaths.
And also, I felt a little like I was intruding on private moments. Like, Edie Falco, you know, whatever. She's a grown-up. She can handle it. But it was a little like, I don't know, I felt a little awkward.
I wonder if it would have gone over whether if they would have, like, gone into commercial breaks with, like, a short clip and maybe a little bit of, like, a pre-taped thing where a couple people say a couple short things. And then they show a clip of, like, Gandolfini acting, and then they go into a commercial like that.
The thing I said in our chat was the way that they could have handled this, if they had already made the determination, these are the however many 5 or 6 most important dead people that just died. What they could have done is, like, move those into their own special where you could have had, like, more interviews, who could have clips from the shows that they were in, you know, where it's like, it seems macabre, but people love that shit. And the example that I used in the chat was when there was that Vogue, like, 5 or 6 years ago where every show was doing a reunion show with their original cast. Like, people love to look back on old stuff like that. And this sort of felt like too much and too little at the same time.
Yes.
Whereas it's like, we want to honor these titans of TV who all died, you could have made more of it, and in, yeah. in a way that wouldn't have ground the proceedings to a halt on the Emmys.
I feel like it was more indicative of just like pacing problems yeah. overall.
Yes.
That just, and I think that's an easy thing to complain about with an award show, but it really, really was true here. And like, just even the idea to like, to segment the broadcast so it was like comedy first and yeah. then drama in the middle and then miniseries somehow at the end because they knew Michael Douglas was going to win and that was like their big celebrity moment at the end. But mm-hmm. all of that seemed arbitrary at best and super dumb at worst. Like if you at least space it out and save some of those comedy bits for later, yeah. then at least you have stuff that happens later on that is lightening things up. Like that Julia Louis-Dreyfus speech that I had Dave make a clip from is probably the comedy highlight of that entire show and really, really went a long way towards making things better, I thought.
Editorial note, I did make a clip for that, but then I lost it, so we don't have it.
Oh, no. Oh, sorry.
We'll link to it in the show notes.
But I can,
if this stays
I can reenact it. Tara, can you thank some people?
I'm sure the clip is online, and we'll put it in the show notes.
I guess we will reenact it.
Yeah, where Tony Hale is playing his Veep character, holding her bag behind her. And it was really funny. And then the Merritt Weaver speech I thought was really funny. And that, I guess, you know, I mean, on one hand, that's really great and funny. On the other hand, I guess, if it's Julie Bowen and Edie Falco winning those awards, you're not going to have those moments. So it's tough to plan winner-based moments.
Yeah.
But still, just front-loading comedy just seemed like not the best idea in general.
No, and
do
it
you
felt
think
like
any of this? Sorry, go ahead.
Please go ahead.
Do you think any of this was a response to knowing that half the viewing audience was going to drop out at 9 o'clock to watch Breaking Bad for an hour and 15 minutes?
Mm.
Do you think they specifically, like, knowledgeably? What's the word I want here?
With forethought and extreme malice.
Yes. That is the phrasing I was looking for.
Yeah.
Thank you, Dave. Planned where various categories would go so that it was like, well,
maybe
some people are going to get up at this point and like pee and go get ice cream and they're not going to care about some of this stuff in the middle. So we'll yeah. just backload it.
But even still, you had things like Claire Danes winning was kind of in the middle of it and Jeff Daniels winning was kind of in the middle of it, and
yeah, that's true.
That just seems slightly odd, and the whatever supporting dramas, and then you save for the last 20 minutes things like supporting actor and actress in a miniseries,
yeah,
which was just weird. And I get that they want to keep all that together, and that again, Michael Douglas is their big ticket that they knew was going to win, so they wanted to save that for the end. But like, I'm not sure that worked out very well at all.
I'm kind of wondering what they can do with an Emmy and I suppose awards in general telecast where they pare it down. Like, I know they want to own the whole night, so it's going to be a show that's 2.5 hours, whatever it is, regardless of what you ideally would want to do, which would be awards, no nonsense, get to them, let everybody have their moment on the podium,
yeah,
within reason, and you're out.
Which is how the Golden Globes usually function.
Right.
Especially, and even more so before they had hosts.
So take that idea, and then, like, let's throw out all the extra stuff we're doing right now. Let's throw out the dance numbers. Let's throw out all that stuff, and then rethink it from square one. Mm-hmm. What can we do to an award show that, let's say, it needs to be 2 hours long and is around 60-70 minutes with of awards, you know, when we give people the time to actually thank everybody mm-hmm. and maybe do more produced pieces about all the shows we're doing, pick more clips that are indicative of the show's quality,
yes.
not just 5 second long things, but maybe like, you know, minute, 2 minute long scenes that really speak to the show's best qualities. What are the other 50 minutes that we padded out with? I say rethink that, come back, and then see if that's a reinvention of the show that everybody can live with.
I do wish they would hand out the guest awards for real on the real telecast, particularly because it's more and more like these are actors as well known as actors who are in, say, the supporting categories.
For sure, yeah.
So, and I mean, then apparently, like, there was this really great moment with Bob Newhart when he won, and like, you sacrifice that for I don't know. The thing with the – I feel like I should stick up – I can't stick up for the dancing thing, obviously. But, like, that's another thing where just, like, you do that smarter and it doesn't stick out like a sore thumb like it does. Where, yeah. like, you put that in the first 20 minutes and maybe incorporate that into Neil Patrick Harris's opening number.
Yeah.
A little bit more. And then all of a sudden it's not happening 2.5 hours into an award ceremony that, like, you know, people are already going to be thinking it's too long.
Yeah.
And then you're taking 10 minutes to do something like that. Like, there's no way that's going to go over well. You're setting yourself up for failure.
Well, and don't have interpretive dances for shit like Game of Thrones where everybody's dying left and right. Like, it's ridiculous. It's like the Oscars doing that. Like,
brother and sister start going at it on the dance floor.
Yeah, or like they did this once at the Oscars, and I think it was like Schindler's List.
Yes.
And,
well, they did the crash dance yes. where they were sort of like...
Yes, and there were like the rhythm gymnastics ribbons happening that would glow in the dark. I'm like, is this a rave? This was Nazi Germany. What are you fucking doing? Yeah. I just don't... I think it's a holdover from a bygone, like two bygone eras ago. That
like, I can
I'm
get the
get
impulse where it's like, here's one award that is for something that we could build a production number around because... They apparently just feel like they need to wake people up every 20 minutes or something.
Right.
But
this, it's not the Tonys, though. Like, that's what right. they, every time something like that happened, it was like, and the same with the musical numbers. Like, I don't need to hear the song Elton John felt like singing or right. writing about right. Liberace. God. That's just embarrassing me. And what the fuck does Yesterday, sung by Carrie nope. Underwood, have to do with the assassination of Kennedy? Nothing! It was so angry.
And also, what does the assassination of Kennedy yes. have to do with this year's Emmys?
Right.
Right.
Nothing.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
It wasn't 50 years ago. It was 50 years ago in November, so shut the fuck up about it. There's already going to be enough goddamn TV specials about it. We'll wait. Sorry.
Yikes.
Where's the hateful Bunsy rant to?
But you know
think
what I
someone
mean?
Cut like, the line.
I totally agree with Dave. Like, there's nothing better than a well-edited montage. Like, when you see a really, I know this sounds stupid, but when you see a really good clip show, like the Seinfeld, whatever,
yeah.
like whatever anniversary it was when they did a really great clip show that was an hour, like, those are great. I wish there was more of that. That would make sense if there was like,
yeah.
you know, montages from the nominated shows rather right. than a song about how late we are.
Like, well, when it
stupid and hack.
I always say that. I always say award shows should be a yearbook of an accurate yearbook of the year that we're honoring. And
yes.
like, yes.
Not under the dome, which and is not eligible this year and is ridiculous.
Have the courage to present your product for what it is.
Yes. Yes.
You know, you are on TV, you are TV. Show us some good TV.
Yeah.
Seems kind of simple to me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone, I think it was Mark Harris, tweeted that the problem with the show is that it seems to be produced by people who don't like TV.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
how that is how it felt.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're still embarrassed by it, or it's like yeah. still the 70s when TV really was this kind of,
yeah.
you know, no one wants to admit that they're watching it, and instead of going to the movies or the theater.
Yeah.
That is a cat having a hairball in the background, by the way.
The
Please
cat is also
Hobie.
Furious about Carrie Underwood singing Yesterday. I'm with you, cat.
Yeah.
All right, so should Preach we go through Hobie. Our high and low lights of the night?
Yeah, oh, there must have been something we liked.
Yes.
Okay, so my best winner, I sort of mentioned her earlier, Merritt Weaver, right at the top of the show. I was not expecting at all. In fact, we'll get to our Emmy pool in a bit, but I'm pretty sure I had her picked as the least likely person to win that award.
As they read her name, I literally said out loud, I wish I thought she could win this. And then she did.
Right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And then her reaction was so great. And like Anna Chlumsky and Edie Falco were so happy for her. And then she got up and her speech was just so incredibly brief, but not in a way that made it feel like she was ungrateful, which sometimes like the very, very brief ones do.
Yes.
But it was just cute and it was funny. And it you really get the feeling that like that's probably – I don't know if Nurse Jackie is even coming back, but – it's probably like the one shot for her to get recognized for that. And
yeah.
she's wonderful.
I mean, I have a problem with it getting nominated in the comedy category, but hers is probably yeah. the most comedic performance. So I was okay
with
it.
It's a show that really doesn't have a place in terms of categorization. I think you'll see that more and
yes.
more where there are you know, comedy dramas that don't really fit in either category.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, but yeah, she's definitely the comedic element of that show.
Yep. I knew someone was going to pick Merritt Weaver. So I went with The Colbert Report, which won Best Comedy or Variety Series, which normally is the one that The Daily Show wins every single year. And I am very happy that the Colbert Report actually managed to unseat it, because it has been the better show of the two for at least the last 4 years, if not longer.
Agreed.
It's so much smarter and cleverer and has such a harder task ahead of it. You know, like, The Daily Show can score easy points every night and does. But the Colbert Report has to really kind of sneak around in it, and it never he never seems like he's cheating, and I love it so much.
Except the interviews. I still think the interviews are extremely
fair,
fun.
But everything Report. Else.
Yeah, I agree.
Dave?
Yeah, my pick for best award is writing for a miniseries for The Hour. I don't quite understand why they call it a miniseries, but I guess that's all regulations and Emmy stuff. It had two series of four episodes each in England. Sorry, the UK. And we're not going to get any more, but I thought it was a nice, tight little series. I wish we got resolution on what was going to happen after the second one, but I'm glad it got some recognition, because it was an interesting take. You know, you can kind of feel that it was sold on, like, let's do something that taps into this Mad Men craze, but, you know, let's do it our own way. Let's put that, you know, stiff upper lip British spin on it. And it was interesting. It was it was sort of like Mad Men meets what we all maybe wanted the newsroom to be. And it really worked. And I'm just glad it got some recognition.
When she won in my living room with me and my roommates, we looked up Abby Morgan on IMDb because I knew that she had written other things.
Yeah.
And the fact that she also wrote both The Iron Lady and Shame along with The Hour is this weirdest, like, it's a very, like, hard to pin down style of hers. But that kind of makes her more interesting to me.
Sarah?
My favorite one was Anna Gunn. I think this might have been one of those past masters wins, because in my opinion, the work that she was doing as an actress was a little more interesting back when she was a little bit more of a, like, bossy biatch, what the character was, and less of a mask of total dread. But I think that Anna Gunn is typically underrated on that show. And also, I was proud of her for not being like, you know, fuck you haters.
Right.
Now my, you know, now my skin is thicker now that I have an Emmy. Like, she just let that out of it and seemed genuinely surprised to have won and was gracious and didn't mention the internet at all. And that's, you know, a plan for living. So good for her.
I feel like she must, I don't know which episode she submitted, but I feel like it had to have been the one where she walks into the pool. And if that was the decision that was made, yes, she should definitely win on the strength of that episode.
Thumbs up.
Totally.
All right, let's move on to our choices for
most infuriating winner.
Yes, exactly.
Joe Reed.
Okay, so I mentioned this is like merits of the dancing segment aside. I was glad that they announced the choreography award on the show, just because it's always the one award I'm most interested at the Creative Arts Emmys, and I always have to dig around for it because I'm such a So You Think You Can Dance fan, whatever. And they had 4 out of 5 opportunities to honor somebody from So You Think You Can Dance, and they gave it to goddamn Derek Hough, who not only won, but, like, was also really smarmy and kind of awful. For Dancing with the Stars, yes. And not only, and he was nominated twice for Dancing with the Stars, and they gave it to the one that it was just him, not him and Alison Hochler, who was his co-choreographer. And, like, just, it was infuriating. I don't know. I guess he's probably not a bad guy. He's probably just some whatever.
Oh, he's probably pure evil.
He's a bad guy.
But, like, I don't know. So
did you see that jacket he was wearing? That's Satan's jacket.
Well, he spells his name without the word ug. I'm just saying.
Yeah, and he gave that sort of, like, semi-finger gun thing when they read his name. And, oh, God, it was awful. Anyway, yeah, that's mine.
Mine is obviously Jeff Daniels winning for The Newsroom.
God,
because as outrageous as it was in the moment, and it was, I was furious. We all know that show is horseshit. I don't know anyone who watches it because they like it. I'm sorry if you do. But he's like blowhard in chief. Like, he's so hard to watch. Of all the things that are kind of redeemable about the show, he's not on the list anywhere close. And even though he deserves some credit for playing two of the biggest fucking assholes in film history, Hap from Terms of Endearment and Bernard from The Squid and the Whale. Two terrible dads also. He completely eradicated all my goodwill for him by winding up his speech in the Sorkiniest way.
Thank you to HBO. I can't imagine a more creative place to work that's so supportive. The cast and crew, I share this with you. Kathleen, my wife, we done did it. We'll have to move the golden Barca lounger that the AARP gave me for the around the shelf. I'd also like to the great American playwright Lanford Wilson said, "Whatever you do in your career, make it matter, make it count."
Shut up.
Aaron Sorkin makes it matter and makes it count.
No, he doesn't.
Thank you very much.
He makes it horseshit. We all know it. It's terrible.
I don't know whether I was like Stockholm syndroming by that point, but like I got so giddy and like not necessarily happy that he won, but just like, I don't know, our entire living room just like erupted into half laughter, half like applause. Because at that point, the show just has gone off the rails and it's so ludicrous. It was one of those things, sort of the mirror image of your Merritt Weaver thing, where I was just like, guys, what if Jeff Daniels won? And they were like, Jeff Daniels! Yes. And it was the best.
God, it was a caps lock fiesta in chat.
God.
And I think this doubled down on my least favorite, which I'm sure will come as a surprise to exactly no one.
Wait, let Dave go first. We've got to wind up the category with you.
Oh, okay.
Dave?
Oh, okay. Worst winner, my pick is Homeland for best writing for season 2.
Yes.
Because that season was horseshit. And especially the plot of this, that was the worst part. Was
well, there was a plot?
The writing. Like
it's true.
I'm just flabbergasted at that because, yeah. I mean, performances, I am not on the Claire Danes is amazing in Homeland train. I think her portrayal is cartoonish to me. Like, I'm not on that. I know I'm in the minority there. But that said, even if you are on board for the performances, and, you know, Damian Lewis, you know, got an award already for this, and Claire Danes got multiple awards for this, the writing in season 2 was just horseshit. The plot was horseshit. The scenarios they set up was just horseshit. I mean, season one started off really well, fell apart at the end, and season 2 just sort of like veered into this 24 territory.
Well, even Damian Lewis gave an interview that came out last week where he was like, he said the writers wanted to kill off my character at the end of season 1.
And they should have.
He
they
said,
totally
he,
should have.
And he said that's not a writer decision. That's a network decision. And he's totally right.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that this should have been a show that tackles different, you know, cases or whatever, different, you know, scenarios.
Yeah.
Each season or arcs or whatever. And like, what are they going to do with the Damian Lewis character now? Like, I don't care. And I don't fucking care about Dana. And oh my God, I'm not going to spoil anything, but like season 3 is just snooze fest so far on the screener side.
Yes.
And I just, that show needs to excise the Brodies. They just need to like toss them out, figure out something to do. I don't care if it's episode 3 and it's weird. Get them out of there. Reset that show.
Yeah.
That is my choice for
worst winner. Okay, I just wanted Sarah to go last so that she could close out this category with the rage that it deserves. Sarah, take us home.
Oh, my God.
Cracking knuckles.
I would like to preface this rant by saying that, first of all, I usually enjoy Bobby Cannavale. Second of all, Bobby Cannavale did seem to share my strong feeling that this win was some bullshit. But this win was not just some bullshit. It was all the bullshit.
Yep.
Are you fucking kidding me? Like, the writing and directing of that role was unacceptable. This is why Boardwalk Empire has a reputation for being boring and self-indulgent, is because they bored and self-indulged with Jip Rossetti and didn't kill him until, like, practically the last frames of season 3. Fuck off. I really wanted to like that season. I was like, he's gonna die. He's gonna die. Someone told me he's gonna die. He's gonna die.
I'll get it.
Hello, Mr. Cannavale.
Even the UPS guy is like,
can I borrow your belt?
May I interject? I am enraged.
Well, it's especially bad for you because it's so fresh. You just finished watching season 3 like last week, practically.
It really, it's unacceptable, especially given who else was in the category.
Yes.
And to the fact that I think this was just the the whatever Emmy Academy's way of being like, no, we watch Boardwalk Empire. We keep up with what's important. We didn't just give them technical awards that you didn't see. Like, who cares? That's all they deserve.
Yeah.
Also, I feel like I want to
bastards
be petty and just say, I was way ahead of the Bobby Cannavale is terrible train on the show.
Yeah, you were.
When I was recapping it, because nobody watched it while it aired.
I'll get it.
Look, Mr. Cannavale, this is my time.
I need you.
But
I need a bigger belt.
When Mark Blankenship and I did the Emmy nomination predictions on previously,
you did.
I remember saying specifically, this is a performance that's just bad enough to get nominated.
Yep.
Even I didn't think it was bad enough to win, but I did. Like, sometimes it just
sometimes
goes that
more
way.
Is better.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah, that was probably my favorite moment of the telecast last night, is when they announced that he won, because I was like, God damn, I wish I was in New York right now.
No, you could have opened a window in Los Angeles.
I think I did hear you
fucking screaming.
All right, most infuriating loser.
Tara, I don't mean to step on your toes on this, because I feel like we're sort of hitting this from multiple angles.
Let's just do it in tandem.
Okay. Modern Family winning was horse crap.
For outstanding comedy series.
For outstanding comedy. Especially because as the ceremony went on, like, they didn't win the supporting awards that they normally win. So
they
started to get that glimmer of hope that maybe it was the steam had, you know, run out of whatever. The steam engine. God, that metaphor got away from me. I'm sorry.
Ding dong.
But especially because its competition this year was, I thought, so strong.
Yes!
And I was really thinking,
and
after
girls.
Julia Louis-Dreyfus won and after Tony Hale won, that we were going to see a win for Veep, which I thought would have been incredibly deserved. I thought that second season was incredibly funny. And I know people have their problems with the show, but I thought it really, really came together very well in the second season.
Yes.
And I was kind of amped up for it, and it was such a letdown when it was just like, again, Modern Family, whatever.
Yeah, and I'm not one of the people who thinks, like, a show should get an award just because it's in its valedictory season, but I would have loved to see 30 Rock take it, even though it has won this award in earlier years. That last season was gold. I mean, it was, especially from the previous season, which I liked. I've always liked 30 Rock the whole way through, but the second to last season was, even I will admit, not as great.
Right.
But that last season was really, really, really strong, and certainly stronger than Modern Family. And fucking Stephen Levitan had to make it worse by turning his speech into some kind of statement about how being bullied when he was younger made him the amazing artist he is today. Like, settle down. Don't piss
like,
away all the goodwill
bullying
that
your driver. Fuck
right,
off.
Seriously, and like, yeah, and he started out by kind of winning me over by making a joke about this being the saddest Emmys ever because of all the death shit, and then he lost me again. That show is terrible. No one
30 Rock
watch
did win
it.
The writing award, though, and that was nice.
It did win the writing
nice
award. That's true. And their speech was very funny. Tina Fey and Tracy Wigfield were great.
Yeah.
Well, I'll piggyback. That was also my choice, Modern Family, for Worst Loser. And I would have liked to see Veep actually take this.
I would have been happy with that, too.
I also enjoy 30 Rock, but I feel Veep kind of came into its own in the second season.
I agree.
It got settled and more comfortable with itself. And when Veep started, I was sort of down on Tony Hale and that character because I thought he was just playing Buster again, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
But I was happy to see him win because I thought he has really become a valuable member of the Veep team.
Indeed.
And I think he's turned that around.
Yeah.
So, Modern Family, I mean, that's a show that I just never got into.
Bland
but
oatmeal.
Even the people that were into Modern Family are, you know, they'd just been saying for the last couple of years, it's not what it was. It's getting worse and worse. Yet everybody's just, it's just like the Emmy darling. And it's going to keep on winning awards until it's canceled or the Emmys implode.
Yes.
Sarah.
Yeah, that's a rowboat full of creamers over there.
Can I just, it's adjacent to Worst Loser, next year, I would really like to see Key and Peele in the variety.
Oh, yeah. Key and Peele.
That would be good.
Nice endorsement for Key and Peele, which just came back last week. Everyone should be watching it. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And I think the nominations for Portlandia will give you some encouragement on that level that they're looking at series like that.
I wouldn't say I was infuriated by Top of the Lake not winning Bupkis, but I was really frustrated by it. I think that this joins Southland and Rectify as the triumvirate of what the hell are people thinking not nominating these things mm-hmm. for anything. I think Rectify may have fallen outside of the nominations period. I'm not sure about that.
No, I think it was. It was in. Yeah, go ahead.
It was eligible.
Yeah, I think so.
And that's a series, even though it was like a short... it was like 6 or 7 episodes to start with, but yeah. It was really well shot. It was really well acted. It was beautiful. I don't think enough people were watching it, but I think plenty of people were watching Top of the Lake. And if you want to give Elizabeth Moss something, I just feel like she's never going to get it when she's nominated for Mad Men.
Yeah, I don't think so.
But she was so good in Top of the Lake. Her accent was a little kind of bottle rockety sometimes, but she did really well, and the like emotional beats she got dead on. And the fact that Southland went down... with nothing. I think they got like a fucking sound editing nomination, like,
and
people.
Gaffer.
It was really good.
So we should watch it, Sarah?
Yes.
We should catch up with it.
And then be enraged.
Okay. I agree with you about Rectify. I wonder if it had figured out the American Horror Story cheat of submitting as a miniseries, even though it wasn't. Because neither is American Horror Story, and don't even with the "it's a totally different story every season."
But
it's the same. But it's the same show. It's practically the whole same cast.
I think administratively it is the same show, but I think
if you could make the same argument about the creative output.
Then put it in as a variety show, since it's all the same people playing different characters every year.
Yeah, well, whatever.
I'd vote for it.
I agree that Rectify should have been nominated over Top of the Lake, but Top of the Lake having been the one Sundance show that got nominated, it would have been nice to see it win, because it was also very good.
Yeah, it's too bad.
So to wrap up the Emmys, let's now take a look at the Emmy pool, which our buddy Andrew had set up. Unfortunately, Tara missed filling out the form, so only me, Sarah, and Joe filled it out.
Wait, you weren't transponster, Tara? I thought that was your fake name.
No, I went to fill out my ballot, but I didn't realize it also included the Schmemmies. So when I went to fill out my ballot, it was like, sorry, it's locked out. So
oh, boo.
Yeah. Sorry, everybody.
I know a lot of the readers filled it out too. Congratulations to Jake. You're number one, and he was number one right from the start, never gave it up. So congratulations to whoever you are. Within the Extra Hot Great Gang universe, surprises. Joe.
Listen.
I thought it was just...
All I will say is...
Wait, hang on a sec, Joe. Hang on a sec.
Yes.
And now a smooth Jolie Apollo's Emmy pool results.
Mean.
Apology. Look, when you're right 22% of the time, you're wrong 78% of the time. What can I say? What a terrible night for me. Right from the start. As I said, Merritt Weaver was my least likely pick. Tony Hale was probably down there for me too.
Yeah. There were weird upsets. Real weird ones.
Jeff Daniels, I think, had no shot. There was a lot of people. Because the way the pool is done, if you didn't take part, it's not only are you picking the winners, you are ranking the 6 nominees in your order of likelihood to win. Oh. So that there are ways to sort of get backup points and things like that.
And there were multipliers for various categories.
And there were multipliers for important categories. Mm-hmm. So you could miss and miss well, or you could miss like I did and miss terribly.
And it came down to the best drama. Before the best drama, I had like 233. Sarah had 232 or something like that.
Yeah, it was like 1 or 2 points separating us.
And then just probably because of the waiting... Because I think I must have not picked Breaking Bad. I wish I had my results in front of me. But Sarah, you obviously picked better, because when the results were in, you had won by 2 points. So there's a 3-point flip on the very last question.
And
Sarah, who
happens.
Says she never wins anything, took home the crown. Congratulations.
Good job, Sarah.
Thank you.
Good job.
Going from one topic to another, an appropriate segue makes it smooth as butter.
Speaking of both shows that suck and winning things, we've decided to do a little Extra Hot Great Fall Season Deadpool. We're each going to pick 3 shows, and then the first person with all their shows canceled wins a to be determined game time advantage.
Mm-hmm.
And we're open to hearing suggestions on that. We have a few ideas of our own, but if you want to put it in the comments, some ideas, not free points or anything like that, maybe just like extra clues or something like that. I'm mulling some ideas, but if you have some, throw them our way.
Yes, we'd love to hear those. What I would love to hear is that the following three shows have been canceled. Dads.
Yeah.
Betrayal, which looks like it was assembled. It's like the IKEA of whatever sexy nighttime soap shows.
Yeah.
Like, barring. Is there anyone in it we've heard of?
Stuart Townsend.
I've never heard of that person.
Formerly used to be the police. Mr. Charlize
No, he used to
Theron.
Be married, or not married to Charlize Theron, but like whatever.
Oh, that thing. Okay.
And he was in The Night Stalker. Remember the two episodes of The Night Stalker that aired on ABC?
And he's finally gotten cast in something again 7 years later.
Yeah.
Speaking of Seven, Lucky Seven is my last show. That's going to be one of those shows that like it'll start to figure itself out, and then the network will give up on it just when I'm starting to kind of like it, like Journeyman. Joe, what are your three?
Yeah, Lucky Seven seems like the non-supernatural version of that 1 year where they decided to make all of those shows about, like, or not necessarily supernatural, but, like, all the shows about, like, disparate groups of people called together by
the
4,400.
Yeah, the 6 degrees or whatever. And also, TV is just never going to get tired of the idea of multiple people on a lottery ticket together.
Uh-huh. Like, that's true.
They really love that idea. That one also has the disastrous thing of being the 10 o'clock show on a night with entirely new shows. So that it's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., it's The Goldbergs, it's Trophy Wife, and then Lucky Seven on Tuesdays on ABC. And I mean, we talked about Trophy Wife, and we thought that actually looked pretty good. But it's one of those things where, like, any of those dominoes fall, and by the time it gets to 10 o'clock on ABC, like, who's going to be left to watch if any of those shows, any of those lead-ins falter? So I think that's pretty likely to be canceled. That's the only one I have overlapping with Sarah. My other two are Back in the Game, also on ABC, with Maggie Lawson, who's one of those actresses who, if you see her face, you're like, oh, right, they keep trying to cast her on things, and it never works out. And James Caan, and it's whatever, he's her dad, and there's a baseball team, and whatever, blah, blah, blah. Which is wedged between, like, The Middle and Modern Family, and it's one of those family-ish sitcoms that nobody wants to watch, or at least not me. And then the third one we talked about last week, I think, on a pilot project, or no, on a
Worse Than Jazz.
We Are Men, oof. When Jerry O'Connell is your number one star, you're trying to hang your notoriety on. That's not good.
Poor Vern.
Yeah.
I agree with Sarah about Dads. TV by the Numbers did its first bubble watch last week, and it's already, admittedly, most of the other new shows have not launched or hadn't as of last week, but Dads was their pick for least likely to come back next year. I hope that turns out to be true. I bet it that Fox will let it play out the string a little while just because of the Seth MacFarlane factor, but we'll see. Sean Saves the World is my pick of the new NBC sitcoms
that's not going to last.
Yeah. It really could have been between that and Welcome to the Family, but
yes.
I'm going to gamble that America is not that into Sean Hayes. I don't know. I don't even think it's because of the gay factor. I just think, like, he's been gone for so long.
His moment is long past, yeah.
Right, and he's tried to come back with guest shots on, like, Smash and stuff. I don't think America cares anymore to see him at the center of a show of any kind.
But Tara, Linda Lavin.
Even so. And my last pick is going to keep me out of contention for winning whatever this advantage comes to be. But my pick for the third slot is HBO's Hello Ladies, which is an adaptation of Stephen Merchant's stand-up show, which Dave and I saw, which was...
Did not care for it.
Fine.
No.
I thought it was boring.
I don't think it was good, but I mean, I think
and
it was great.
Coming from Stephen Merchant, who you know is a very funny guy, did not impress me at all.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
this
the
is
problem,
kind of you...
The problem with picking this for the sake of this exercise is HBO is not going to announce that it's not coming back for a while.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to be this year's, like, even though it got
a
two
principled
seasons,
pick
Flight of the Conchords.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, HBO cancels things by keeping mum about it for about 10 months and then being like, oh, that? Yeah, we're not bringing
like
that back.
Like a bad boyfriend.
Very passive aggressive.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's my pick.
All right, interesting. All right, so we'll, I don't know, I guess we'll have to just revisit this every time something gets canned. And we'll see at the end of the season how it shakes out, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, indeed. Good luck, everyone.
All right, so now on to some site biz.
Mm-hmm.
Who wants to take this one?
I will.
Because we need to do a little backstory.
This is something we may have talked about show before, because we did it with TV shows. But the when Dave and I, as a married couple, have to bet on things, we don't bet with money because it's all the same money.
Yep.
We bet on the winner gets.
And may I say, we don't bet on chores because we've divided them exactly how we want them. Because,
yes,
like, I hate doing folding laundry. Tara hates dealing with dishes.
Yes.
So that's all.
Also, I don't want Dave to fold the laundry because he wouldn't do it.
I don't do it right.
And everything else is done by our cleaner because we're jerks. But
so the currency of our bets
is the winner gets to force the loser to see a movie of the winner's choice, sometimes the winner's tolerance.
Yeah.
Sometimes it comes down to a matter of something the winner wants to see only marginally
more than
the loser does not want to see.
I am remembering this conversation. We definitely did talk about this, but I'll say it again. The sweet spot for the movie forcing is something that you know the other person will super hate having to see.
Yes.
But you will at worst tolerate it.
Yes.
Right.
The perfect movie that you missed the opportunity to make me see was the Nicolas Cage vehicle Knowing.
Yes.
That should give you an idea of where we're pitched.
Exactly. Because Tara would really resent having to go see it.
So much.
And I
will watch some shit. I recorded The Net this weekend because I wanted to see it again.
Knowing was great because Knowing, I would hang around with you guys and I'd be like, hey, that movie Knowing, huh, Dave? And you'd be like, shut up, Joe.
Yeah, Dave, I think, still has like two movie forcenings in his pocket that he's had for like a matter of years.
Yeah.
Because sometimes when we bet, it's just like, it's to erase one of his chits.
Yeah. So anyway,
with all
so that's
that in
the
mind,
idea.
This was Sarah's big idea. Sarah, go ahead.
Well, I forget why. I think we were researching some show that we thought would be like Bunting Kryptonite or something. And I was like, hey, you know what would be fun, by which I mean terrible and cause hurt feelings all around, is if we adapted the movie forcening to be a TV forcening.
Yes.
So we sort of spitballed it a little like, will one person be forcening the whole rest of the group? Or are we going to forcen it in a daisy chain? So we bounced it back and forth, and what I believe we have settled on is that the illustrious Picky, who has screwed me so many times in recent game times that I trust nothing that's about to happen, and I'm sure I'm going to have to watch a documentary in Serbian about fucking Rod Stewart, but anyway.
If such a thing is on TV only, no movies,
Picky,
just TV.
Yes, okay. We should negotiate whether TV movies count. But Picky will determine the order. It's going to be a sort of down-the-line daisy chain of forcenings in which, for example, I force Joe to watch something, and then Joe has to force Tara, and Tara forces Dave, etc.
I've been
so
calling
on.
It a circle hurt.
Nice.
Yes.
And so we're going to pick the order, and then the results will be all of, not this week's minis, all of next week's minis, as each of us gives a report on the thing that he or she was forced to watch by Picky and the Picky empowered person.
Okay.
Yes. Let's go.
And on that note, Picky.
All right. Person in control choosing initiative 3000. Picky, who will go first?
We will start with Tara.
All right.
Okay.
Joe.
All right.
Oh, shit.
Damn it.
David.
All right.
Shit.
Okay.
Sorry,
Dave. Sense of anarchy again.
And we all know the last one, but Picky, let us know.
Sarah.
All right. So,
God.
Tara.
I'm so scared.
Picks for Joe.
Joe picks for me.
Yep.
And I pick for Sarah.
Yep.
And Sarah completes the circle and picks for Tara.
That's going to be hard. Sarah knows a lot about me and my terrible, terrible TV taste. Finding something that will be beneath my notice is going to be really, really hard.
All right. That sounds like fun.
Bros versus Joes. Get ready.
All right, everybody. It's time for the canon. And this week we have a submission from Liz. Thank you, Liz. This is your extra credit submission.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. This is Liz from New York, and I'm submitting Happy Endings Season 2, Episode 21, Four Weddings and a Funeral, minus Three Weddings and One Funeral, for submission to the canon. In the opener to this episode, the gang is talking about Derek and Eric's wedding extravaganza that's coming up in a few days. Their conversation is a great example of how the show always took the classic hangout sitcom premise to new and weirder levels.
I haven't seen anything that choreographed since Colin Powell's UN testimony on WMDs. Am I right?
Are you really cleaning underneath the couch, or are you just waiting to slide out with an outdated zinger?
I haven't seen anything that unnecessarily complicated since the third season of Lost. Am I right?
Asking am I right is not going to make it funnier.
Yeah, I'm right!
Jane is using a car mechanic's creeper to clean every inch under the couch. Alex is having difficulty combining Derek and Eric's names into hybrid couple name. And everybody places bets on how long it will take Penny to mention her boyfriend of the moment, since for once she won't be relegated to the singles table.
Guys, I am just so excited to not be at the singles table for once. I finally have a date to a wedding, and I think this is going to be really good for me and Steve.
And time! 3 minutes and 7 seconds till she mentioned the guy she's dating. Who had 3 minutes?
I had 11 seconds.
For sure, I thought she was opening with it, so I'm out.
I had 2 hours. Guys, that's not a cool thing to bet on.
3 minutes. Pay up, suck dogs.
Make it rain. You guys talk about me when I'm not around?
All the time.
But things start to fall apart before we even get to the ceremony. Brad gets fired from his job. Max is asked to perform in his all-man Madonna cover band, Mandonna, but thinks he's too fat. And Penny's boyfriend dumps her for moving too fast. At the wedding, Jane uses her control freak tendencies to help Eric save money on the reception.
I blew all my money on the save-a-date, and now I don't have enough for everything at the reception. Jan was going to help me hide it from Derek, but she got food poisoning.
I didn't do it!
Nobody said you did.
Right.
I just want Derek to have a perfect wedding.
Okay. Here's what we're going to do. First, we're going to slow down these past apps every 5 minutes instead of two. We're going to cut the entrees in half, and you know what? I'm going to need a guy on the inside. Oh, yeah. Look at that soft body. I can turn him.
You are one wily bitch.
While Brad attempts to keep his new unemployment a secret from her, Alex tries to convince Max to get the cover band back together, and Penny is forced to sit at a new and more embarrassing version of the singles table, the Skype table. She also discovers she might have feelings for Dave, but walks in on what looks like Dave and Alex rekindling their romance and thinks better of telling him. In the end, Max embraces his new body, slaps on a mole, and gives a smashing performance of Like a Prayer with Mandonna. We also meet a new potential boyfriend for Penny, and we see the promise of a Dave and Alex couple next season. Aside from the usual rapid-fire jokes, this episode has lots of great little throwaway moments. We find out that Penny went to prom with one of the guys from Murder Ball, Jane has a hidden talent for making napkins look like hunks of brie, and Alex thinks the hotel concierge looks like an Indian Martin Lawrence, and naturally assumes that is the difficult thing that Penny wants to talk to her about. Also, since the series had really hit its stride at this point, and wasn't afraid to make fun of itself, this episode is chock full of references and cartoonish comedy that make it even more fun for the fans upon rewatching the series. This episode is a great capper for the nearly perfect second season of Happy Endings, and really shows what this fast-paced, hilarious show has to offer. I hope you'll submit it into the canon, and thanks for bringing the podcast back, guys. Bye!
Thanks, Liz. That was a very solid submission, I thought, and hitting me particularly at a time when I'm missing Happy Endings the most. I think with the new season of TV starting, I'm really, really bummed looking at some of these so-called comedies that I'm not going to get new Happy Endings episodes to watch. This particular episode, I'm not entirely sure is my jam. It being the second season finale, there was an effort made, I thought, to include a lot of story business in the episode, particularly the Dave Penny romance ramp up thing that never ultimately went anywhere, and I think that's fine because I really wasn't into the Dave and Penny stuff anyway. I appreciate sort of the need for a sitcom to sort of have that emotional check-in at the end of a season where you sort of get to the actual stories more than the laughs, but I think it makes it a good episode but not a great one. I do feel like Jane got the best stuff to do, and when Jane gets the best stuff to do, that's always a positive. The moment where she finds out that she's the only one of the group who's not in the wedding, I thought was great. I had Dave, do you have that clip?
Yeah, I do. Here you go.
Okay.
So Penny, since you're going to be up there being a groom's lady, old Steve can sit with the rest of us. Can't wait to get to know him.
Wait,
No one told Jane about the wedding party situation?
What about it?
Everybody's in it but you.
Is it wrong?
But that's only because we organized the party according to height, and I already had a 5'8". I'm so sorry.
It's fine. Quiet Jane is the scariest Jane.
The world's most dangerous Jane.
That moment manages to combine a few of my favorite things, one being Jane, two being world's most dangerous game jokes, and three, at the very end, you can see it, obviously, Derek just holds up a placemat, it looks like, that he's just written drama on.
Yeah. Oh, love that.
A little of Derek goes a long way. That's another sort of issue I have with this episode. A little of Derek goes a long way. He's basically one joke. They tend to do a really good job on the show of peppering him in once every, like, 6 or 7 episodes. The one where Max is trying to find a gay bar and Jane goes on like the litany of like, let me guess what the name of the bar is. Yes. Like that was, I thought, a really
like
good use of Derek.
500 jokes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was great. But I think moments like that are kind of few and far between in this episode. I feel like there's a lot of business happening that's sort of getting in the way of... I think Happy Endings is the best for me when it sort of just like goes full crazy, and maybe something like the episode where Max and Dave keep violating codes on each other, the one that ends up with the tight home perm, like something like that. This one, again, I think it's not a bad episode. I think it's just on the list of all my Happy Endings, favorite Happy Endings episodes, it would probably be well in the middle.
You hit on something that I really enjoyed about this episode, and I haven't seen, I've probably seen about a third of the episodes, I think, so far. Tara sort of finally sold me on it, and we've been kind of watching
just
them.
Just in time for it to get canceled.
Yeah, just in time for it to get canceled. But I enjoy the amount of elastic reality they've injected into this show. You know, fantastical things happen, but they're sort of grounded, you know, like it's not, you know, Simpsons season 14, stupid, crazy, you know, like there's an alien and it's not in the Treehouse of Terror episode anymore. You know, it now exists in the real world. They haven't gone that far, but it lets them do some really great jokes. Like the whole thing at the beginning with where she's just under the couch and there's really no conceit for it, but just so that she can tell those jokes. I mean, that's funny, and those jokes are funny.
And it would be funny enough if they were just jokes, but that they're super old jokes, too, is like, that's an extra layer.
Well, and there's enough of a tether into, like, Jane is a control freak. You can see where, like, the underside of the couch being clean is a plausible reason enough. So,
And for me, like, the reason why I like this show more, Tara, can you cover your ears for a second? The reason why I like a show like this more than a show like Friends is that,
and maybe, I'm fine with that,
and maybe because the show just never had a chance to, is that it doesn't, it at least in the episodes I have seen, it doesn't go into that fucking, you know, like, now we're going to get a little serious about where everybody is in their love life and Ross and Rachel, and are they then. So one thing I really didn't like about this episode, and Joe, you touched on it, was that whole she likes him, but maybe she's going out, you know, with the, I don't know any character.
Alex.
Doesn't matter.
Thank you. Yeah. That gave me like the friend shudder. Like, oh, I don't want that it to go there. Like, that's my least favorite part of any sitcom is when they start shipping it.
I remember when it first aired, I like instinctively cringed. I was like, that was great, but like, don't do that. Don't go in that direction. Yeah.
The opening with the very nonchalant air freshener thing at the very beginning of the episode where he just like walks into the living room spraying air freshener back into the washroom killed me. I don't know. It was really funny. Mandana's obviously, you know, priceless. It's really funny thing.
Good.
I really love the little mini list of Mandana Chicago groups I got it here.
Mandana? You guys were one of my top three favorite Chicago-based all-male Madonna cover bands, right up there with McDonald and Material Earl.
Material Earl.
I don't understand McDonald.
McDonald.
Donald.
Like the name Donald, it's all male.
But why does it have to do with Madonna?
Madonna.
Madonna. McDonald.
They're all named Donald?
Sure.
No, it's like Madonna. Are you joking? You really not get this?
It's working backwards. I don't know. I don't get it.
Yes.
Okay. So I wanted to go from 1 to 2, but it's going from 2. Hey, come on. Give me a break.
That's embarrassing.
What?
Yeah, I'm embarrassed.
Well,
sorry.
And the other. I like TV. Hooray. And the other thing
that
I
clip,
like,
though, also, like. Alicia Cuthbert kind of came a long way on that show, and that clip is a good example of that.
Yes.
Like, she delivers that pretty well.
And the other...
Yeah, I liked her on this.
The other question I had was, can you guys explain Mandonald? and the follow-up to that conversation I really enjoyed as well.
Max, come on, you looked great. You gotta do it, buddy.
Yeah, break out the Madonna mole. Mole!
Guys, enough! That part of my life is over. I hung out my Cone Brown headset a long time ago. Though I will always love Sean Penn, no matter how creepy and thin his mustache gets. Looks like a hulked out, roided up John Waters.
Very true.
And what you can't see is that when really he says enough, he does a little Vogue move with his hands.
When this show is in funny mode, when this episode is in funny mode, it's really good. Like, just a lot of great lines, like when they're in the hotel and the rest of Mandonna comes into the lobby. The line to hide me under your unnecessarily large hat was really great. But there was like this lull in the middle of the episode, and I found that the Jane storyline after the couch gag kind of fell flat. You know, being excluded from the wedding party and the whole thing with the yellow suit and all that kind of stuff. It didn't really go places that I thought it could have.
Yeah, I feel like that could have been so much more.
Yeah,
really.
I agree. And the fact that it ends on the big Mandonna number only kind of highlights that the middle was a bit weak.
I'm curious to know what Sarah thinks, because I know she did not watch this show.
I did not watch this show. The sort of relationship-y parts that you were talking about, I didn't love it, but it was like so much less than what you've come to expect from your standard sitcom that I didn't mind it. I thought that... They're holding hands at the end was sort of sweet. I am shocked that no one ever TV forced me to watch the show before, because like everyone in my family, they shorten everything, like calling her Black Wigs.
Black Wigs.
I was like, my people. I actually think my brother and sister-in-law, who are my housemates, do watch the show. I don't know which direction that trend travels, but I thought that was awesome. I loved the drama placemat. I loved the list of Mandonna cover bands. I loved You're My Aside Guy. I loved the Skype table and like the lecherous uncle. Like that gag was like so Catskillsy and kind of old, and they just kept going back to it. I liked it. I thought it was good. It was a good use of 21 minutes.
Remember the other thing I wanted to mention that I liked about this show in general, also this episode, is that although... Alex is
Alicia Cuthbert.
Yeah. Alex, even though they've kind of set her up to be the punching bag of the show, everybody gets punched.
Yes.
There's not the one character. There's not like she's Jerry from Parks and Rec and everybody else gets a pass.
Right.
Everybody gets zinged. Everybody gets theirs. And I like that about the show.
Well, what I like about the show, in addition to everything everyone else said, so I'll keep this short, is I know it's hard for shows to make a committed couple still funny after the whole will they or won't they thing is over, which, I mean, we didn't get to see that with Jane and Brad, but presumably it happened at some point in the past before the show started. The point is, the thing that everyone always says is your show is going to get less funny once your couples up, and I know that's what everyone is saying about New Girl already, especially this season, but Brad and Jane are so goofy.
Yeah.
They're the best.
They're the married couple on a sitcom that every other sitcom with a married couple should be like, if we can't do a Jane and Brad, we just shouldn't bother.
Yeah.
Because I think they solved that problem, and they always were funny and interesting and like had their weird activities and like the whole thing with their spa treatments and their stinky cheese. It's like, yes, of course, those are things that they would enjoy.
Yeah.
So I liked that we got a lot of a nice Brad and Jane storyline that also ended with, you know, an affirmation of, like Joe said, the emotional check-in at the end of the season, that in addition to their goofiness, like they really do love each other and are mutually supportive. And, you know, although she freaked out initially learning that he had lost his job, she bounces right back and figures out that she's going to fix shit, and she does, and it's great. That was a lot of what season 3 was. And ending on the Mandonna number with Brad getting up on stage and doing the dance with Max, obviously that's Tara Nip. Like, I love that moment. Yeah. I realized as I was watching it, I had a like totally goofy, stupid smile on my face because it was sweet and heartwarming. And I agree with the hand-holding. I thought it was nice. And I also like that Alex's reaction when Penny comes to the room to try and talk to her about Dave, that she, because it's Alex, she has no concept of how it may look that Dave is in the background with his shirt off. Like, she's right. just like, whatever. Yeah, sure. Totally come in. Oh, no. Okay, that's fine. Like, it's yeah. just Alex being Alex. So I thought this was a great episode. I enjoyed it very much. I was happy to revisit it. And in fact, when Dave said there's a happy endings user submitted canon, I thought, I bet it's this one. And I was right.
I yes. laughed the whole time, but I had never watched it before, so this might be a relatively disappointing episode. I just wouldn't know. So
I thought it was funny the whole way through.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Shall we put it to a vote, people?
Sure.
All right. Joe?
I'm going to say no, but thank you for the submission.
Sarah?
I'm going to say yes, but what do I know?
Tara?
I vote yes also.
Wow, this is a squeaker. I was sort of on the fence here, because I feel like maybe I don't have a full enough history to kind of like make a relative quality vote on this. But when it comes down to it, I think that I laughed a lot. I really enjoy the characters. It makes me want to watch more of the show.
Yeah, you're not a big sitcom laugher. Even shows that you enjoy, you're not a big LOL guy.
No, but it really comes back to the perfect quality of elastic reality for this show. I can't stress how important that is to a mm-hmm. show for me to sort of be comfortable with breaking some rules, but not breaking all the rules. Mm-hmm. And I thought this episode did good. I do think it lulled a bit in the middle when the wedding is actually happening, like the reception. I thought it was a little weaker, but overall, I like this episode. I think it's a good entry, and I am going to say yes. So therefore,
hey.
3-1, you're inducted into the canon. All right, happy ending, season 2, episode 21. Tara, what's the title?
4 weddings and a funeral minus 3 weddings and a funeral, I think.
You are hereby inducted into the extra hot great canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
All right, it's time for winner and loser of the week. Wow, it's going to be a long episode, people. Sarah, you have our winner this week.
Hey, my winner is Henry Winkler. He has a kids' book series, Hank Zipser, World's Greatest Underachiever, and it's set to become a show on BBC, an animated show, I believe. And I just like Henry Winkler and think he's neat, and I'm glad that good things happen to him.
Our loser of the week is Isis, the Downtown Abbey dog. I believe that's his name.
I don't know.
Or her name. This Donald. Is not a spoiler, but in season 4 premiere of Downton Abbey, just happened in the UK, he wasn't in the credits.
No dog butt.
No dog butt. It's very important to me that every episode of Downton Abbey start with the dog butt, because it is watching a dog walk away, especially going downstairs, but just in general, like a big dog like that, like where it's kind of, sort of, it's got that butt side to side thing. It's the funniest thing. You cannot watch a dog walk downstairs and not be in a better mood by the time it hits the bottom.
This is a true thing. Dave has called me over to the stairs with, watch Gordon. What am I looking at? Look at his butt. I swear to God, multiple times. Yeah, they didn't. You're not looking right. Serious conversation to have.
Saving graces. They didn't redo the credits, but it was just like a special kind of thing, because all the stuff that happened last year is coming home to Downton Abbey.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah. So loser of the week, Isis, the Downton Abbey dog. Guys, do you know what time it is?
It's game time.
It's game time.
Time for games.
All right, everybody. This is the 6th game time of the season. Our standings currently are Sarah with 0, ooh, Tara with 2, Joe in the lead with 3 points.
Woohoo!
Shit.
This week we are playing Eyes on the Prize. Because it is Emmy week and everybody's getting awards, we're going to celebrate that with a game from David Johnson, who earns himself an extra credit for this one. In this game, I will read you the name of an award or prize given out on TV. You're going to tell me the show it is from for 2 points.
Mm-hmm.
This is an on-show award.
I understand.
In the script.
Okay.
Yeah, not an award.
Gotcha.
You can ask for a clue
yep.
in the form of the first name of the character who received the prize.
Okay.
Okay. After which the correct answer is worth only 1 point.
Okay.
You're looking at me like you don't understand.
No, I think I understand.
I ask questions.
These are fictional prizes from shows.
They are awards in shows. Some are fictional. Some are like real awards that characters on shows have gotten.
Okay.
Like somebody got an Oscar on a show or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh,
got
I see.
It. Okay.
Some,
okay.
They're not all fictional. Some are based on real things.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Picky 3000 has picked, let's see.
Sarah.
All right, Sarah's going first. That means we're going to go from Sarah to Joe and then to Tara. Are we ready to play Eyes on the Prize?
Sure.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Sarah.
Yes.
The award is the Harper Avery Award.
The Harper Avery Award?
Yes.
I have no idea.
Okay, would you like a hint?
I would.
Okay, the award went to Preston. The award went to Preston.
Real World Road Rules Challenge.
If only, though.
Incorrect.
That's for you, Joe.
The show was Grey's Anatomy.
Oh. Yeah,
oh.
I forget that.
Right, then.
Joe.
Yes.
Cable Ace Award for Best Writing for a Movie or Miniseries for The Heart Held Hostage.
Damn it. Because there was a Cable Ace Award. Well, I don't want to give it away if it's coming. For what? For what show? What
the Heart Held Hostage.
Jesus H. I would like a hint, please.
Your hint is Diane.
Diane. Gosh. I don't know.
Want to take a guess, or?
Now I'm coming up blank on shows with Diane's.
Cheers.
Oh, really?
Yep.
She won a Cable Ace Award? Good for her. That's good.
Aw, Cable
for
Ace Awards.
Yeah.
And I want to remind everybody at this time, all questions are randomized.
Oh, lordy.
As is the starter. So when people get questions like this and it seems like the fix is in, I assure you it is not. Your award.
I'm sorry in advance, everybody.
Is the Geller Cup.
fuck off.
It's from
then
Friends?
I can get this one.
Correct for 2 points. Sarah.
Yes.
Best Actor Oscar for Hard to Watch based on the novel Stone Cold Bummer by Manipulate.
May I have a hint, please?
Your hint, the character that received this award is named Tracy.
30 Rock?
Nice.
Correct for 1 point. Joe.
Yes.
The award is the Golden Lily.
How I Met Your Mother.
Really?
That's what I would have said, too.
The character was Rebecca from Greek.
Oh, interesting.
All right.
I don't recall that.
To
Me?
Tara.
Yep.
The award is the Bushiest Beaver Award.
The Office.
Pardon me, can say that.
The Office.
Correct for 2 points. Sarah.
Oh, Phyllis.
Gold medal for kangaroo racing.
The gold medal for kangaroo racing. Uh-huh. I'm afraid that I will need a hint.
The hint is Scooby Dum.
Scooby Dum?
Apparently.
The Adventures of Scooby Doo?
Is it Laugh Olympics?
Laugh Olympics, correct. Yeah, nice one, Joe. All right, Joe.
Yes.
Trailblazer of the Year Award.
Hint.
Phil.
Modern Family.
Oh, you've been eliminated.
Oh.
That is from Better Off Ted.
From Better Off Ted. Aww.
All right, Tara.
I'm lambasting myself for missing this.
Nice.
The Constant Billard School's Queen Bee Diamond Tiara. The Constant
Gossip Girl.
For 2 points, and that brings us to our first score break.
Does it have to?
Oh, guys.
Been there.
Joe has 0. Sarah has 1. I regret to say I have 6. I'm really, really sorry. Picky.
Still plenty of games.
No,
to
you're
go.
Not.
Okay, Sarah.
Yes.
The Jones Walker Game Night Trophy. The Jones Walker, that's like a hyphen, Nate.
Right.
Game Night Trophy.
Jones Walker Game Night Trophy. May I have a hint, please?
The character that received this award is named Nora.
Oh, Brothers and Sisters.
Nice.
Correct for 1 point. Joe.
Yes.
Physician of the Year at Columbia Hospital.
Hint.
Cliff.
Oh, The Cosby Show.
Correct for 1 point.
Tar. All right.
Yep.
On the board.
The blood-soaked prom king crown.
Clone High.
Correct. That was Cinnamon. Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
California State Bar Association Award for Distinguished Service in the Field of Environmental Law.
Oh, Christ.
Yeah.
May I have a hint, please?
The character that received this award is named Mitchell.
Mitchell?
Mitchell.
I'm going to say L.A. Law. Yeah, no.
Modern Family. Yeah.
That's one. Modern Family.
Okay. All right, Joe.
Yes.
Clio Award for the Glow Coat commercial.
Mad Men.
2 points.
Nice.
Tara?
Yep.
Life Achievement Opie Award.
Hint.
Maybe.
Oh, Arrested Development.
Correct. Sarah?
Yep.
Emmy Award for the documentary Backpage News.
May I have a hint, please?
Character that received this award is J.H.
J.H.?
J.H. I can't give you the additional information that I'm pretty sure you have watched this show.
I kind of want to guess WKRP in Cincinnati, but since I haven't watched that show.
The show in question is Homicide, Life on the Streets.
Oh, J.H.
All right. Number 17.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
This is for Joe.
Yep.
Yes.
Local Area Media Award.
Okay. The
Local Area Media Award. What show is that from?
I have an inclination, but I'm going to want a hint.
That's probably... This is a good hint. Robin.
Yeah. How I Met Your Mother.
Good for 1 point. Joe playing it safe. Always a good strategy.
Screwed myself out of a point. Whatever.
For Tara.
Yep.
Stephen R. Schaffer Lifetime Achievement Award. Schaffer. Stephen R. Schaffer Lifetime Achievement Award.
Hint.
Okay, the hint is, I cannot give you a hint because the hint is the title of the show. So the character is also the title of the show.
Ally McBeal.
Oh, good guess.
Frasier.
Oh.
Frasier. All right.
Close.
We are pretty much... two-thirds away into our quiz.
All right. Sarah has 2. Joe has 4. I have 9.
2-4-9. And we're back with Sarah for... 19. With number 19 for Sarah, the award is Comfort Foods Cook-Off Blue Ribbon.
Comfort Foods Cook-Off Blue Ribbon. I will need a hint.
The character is Olive.
Olive?
Correct.
Yeah, I don't know this one.
Pushing Daisies?
Pushing Daisies, no. Correct.
Oh.
Yep.
Pushing Daisies. Yep.
Joe?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. Oh, excuse me.
Jeez.
Writers Guild Award for Removing All Doubt.
Oh, damn it.
Writers Guild Award for Removing All Doubt.
Hint.
Matt.
Oh, that was my guess.
Matt was the character's name.
Matt.
Yeah.
Writers Guild Award for Removing All Doubt. Matt. Episodes?
Is it Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip?
It is.
Oh,
because
God,
the award he's
right.
getting in the pilot.
Picky. Oh, that's right.
For Tara.
Yep.
Texas State Championship Trophy.
The Dillon Panthers? Oh, Friday Night Lights. Friday Night Lights. Friday Night Lights.
Wow.
One more time.
Yeah.
Friday Night Lights.
Okay, Sarah. 12th place trophy at Nationals. The 12th place trophy at Nationals.
Hint, please.
Brittany.
Brittany?
Yeah.
That narrows it down.
Yep.
Brittany. I don't know.
Glee.
Oh.
Joe.
Yes.
Riviera Magazine's Man of the Year.
Ooh.
Riviera
Magazine.
This
is another one where I have a bit of a... Yeah. All right, hint?
The character is Sandy.
Yes, the OC.
Correct for 1 point.
That's twice now I've had a thought and I've bailed out on a hint. Ah, well.
If you lose by 2 points.
I know. Yeah. I won't lose by 2 points, let me tell you.
For Tara. Mm-hmm. Chancellor's Award for Science.
Beverly Hills 90210?
Should have asked for the hint, which was Sheldon.
Oh.
Yeah. Big Bang Theory.
90210 is the only show that I know that ever cared about a chancellor.
That is true.
Sarah.
Yes.
The BAFTA Award for Lyman's Boys.
The BAFTA Award for Lyman's Boys.
Yeah, so there's a couple hints in there.
Mm-hmm. I will need another one.
The character is Beverly.
Beverly?
Yeah. And we're going to give you the additional hint that this show has been mentioned as an incorrect answer in this quiz.
Beverly Hills.
Okay, I get where you're going with that one, but that was a stupid answer.
Okay, McDonald's.
Tara, you know what this is.
It's episodes.
It's episodes.
That was episodes, yeah.
All right. Back to Joe.
Yes.
First place award for trying the hardest. First place award for trying the hardest.
This does not sound familiar to me, which makes me think it's Futurama.
It was the Brady Bunch. That's Bobby's award from the Brady Bunch.
Brady
I'm going to guess he learns a very important lesson.
I would have thought that was his Buster Award from Arrested Development.
Tara.
Yes.
The Nom de Plume Society's Tom Straw Award for Mystery Literature. We need the show. You can ask for a hint.
Castle.
Yes!
Nice!
Wow!
I almost said Murder, She Wrote, and then I was like, no one's going to put that in the
show. Which is why I always lose.
All right, only a couple questions for everybody left. Let's get the scores.
All right, Sarah has 2, Joe has 5, I have 13.
Okay, also well, let's play present. The rest of the game. Let's just see how it goes. All right, Sarah, put on your thinking cap for this one. Are you ready?
Oh, wow, Dave's neck actually just audibly cracked.
Gross. The first annual Montgomery Burns Award for Outstanding Achievement in the field of excellence.
I would like to fume that I don't need your pity, but I do. This is from The Simpsons.
Correct, for 2 points. Joe.
Yes.
The Golden Clam.
The Golden Clam.
Yep.
Hint.
Cleveland.
Family Guy.
1 point. Tara.
Mm-hmm.
The Tellenson. I'm going to spell that out for you.
Okay.
Tellenson.
Yes, Tellenson.
Yeah, Tellenson Award for Public Service.
Hint.
Marlene.
One Tree Hill? I don't know.
That's Parks and Rec. Parks and Rec.
Okay.
Yeah. Sarah?
Mm-hmm.
Employee of the Year at the Sunshine Center.
At the Sunshine Center?
Yep.
May I have a hint?
You may have a hint. I'm going to give you 2 hints. First hint is the character is Roman. The second hint is that the answer is staring at you in the face. Once again, the Employee of the Year at the Sunshine Center.
And the answer is staring me in the face.
The answer, a big part of the answer, I just read to you.
I'm still going to answer Days of Our Lives.
Is it Mr. Sunshine?
Yes. Mr. Sunshine, correct.
Oh, yes. God.
Joe.
Good job, Joe.
Yes.
Tony Award for Best Musical for Scarsdale Surprise.
Yes. Seinfeld.
Correct. Tara.
She never swings her arms when she dances.
Yes.
The best mailbox at the Willow Canyon Homeowners Annual Party. Best mailbox at the Willow Canyon's Homeowners Annual Party.
Hint.
The character is Gordon.
I don't know.
The show? Party Down. All right.
Ah.
Last question for Sarah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
The Jumbonium Miss Universe Tiara.
The Jumbonium Miss Universe Tiara? Fuck it. Futurama.
Nice!
Oh, very good.
Fish is strong.
Last question for Joe. Week.
Yes.
The 2013 CMA Award for Best Female Vocalist.
Nashville.
Yeah.
Nice. Right. It is.
And last one for Tara.
Yep.
First place trophy for Rosalita's Run, plus a whole bunch of Foot Locker keychains and one of those metal things they use to measure your feet.
I know, I know it. Hint.
Penny.
Happy ending.
Correct. Happy endings. All right. Shits and giggles. Here's the tiebreaker. First person to shout it out gets the bonus Dave point. The Class Protector Award.
Buffy.
Buffy. Ah. Good.
Correct. It was Buffy. All right. Final scores, please.
Sarah with 6, Joe with 10, me with 14.
Tara.
Yay, Tara.
Good job, Tara.
Thank you.
All right. Congratulations, Tara. Well,
thank you, Picky. Really.
Done. All right. That's it for another episode of Extra Hot. Extra Hot. Great. We started the wrap-up section and then asked the question, do you know what time it is? It's bonus non-regulation game time.
Yeah.
Take it away, Joe.
Okay, so we are going to play a bonus non-regulation game time that arose from when we did our ill-fated episode 0 of the new Extra Hot Great. Sarah and I ended up at a bar afterwards to have a drink to deal with things. And as you sometimes do in the middle of conversation, you pull out your phone to look up an actor that you want to see what they were in or whatever. And so we noticed that on the IMDb on your phone and also on your whatever computer, it gives you those most known roles, right? 1, 2, 3, 4, their most known roles. And yep. It's an odd, very odd algorithm we noticed where it's some combination of like popularity and notoriety and...
I'm pretty sure it's a straight search algorithm, but you still can't guess like whatever John Travolta's top four are. Trust me.
Right.
You're not going to guess them. But then once you know them, it makes perfect sense.
So this, like, I tried this with at a couple different like events that I was at in the next few weeks, and it proved to be fairly popular. And I mentioned this to my editor at Tribeca, Lindsay Robertson, past guest of the show, Lindsay Robertson. And I was just like, I'm probably just going to put this up on my Tumblr if I, and she's like, no, put it on the site. So we put it up on the site, and I'm just calling it the IMDb game because I'm very creative when it comes to these things. So we thought we would do a little sort of truncated version of this where I would be the games master and Dave would step into one of the three contestant chairs.
Hooray!
With you guys.
Whoa.
Very excited. Sorry, what's the game called again?
The IMDb game.
McDonald's.
It's called McDonald's. So I have enough questions for you each to do two. The rules are, I give you an actor, you have to guess their four most known roles as per the IMDb. You get three strikes you're out. On two strikes, you will get the years of the movies or television shows that you have not gotten yet. Also, I am obligated to tell you if one or more of the roles are voiceover-only roles.
Mm.
All right.
Everybody clear?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I guess I'll just do the order of the game time, except we'll slot Dave in for where I was.
All right.
So Sarah will go first, then Dave, then Tara. We can keep score by just for every one of them you get right, you get a point.
Okay.
We'll see who's up at the end. So Sarah first. Also, I made some effort to tie all of these actors that I picked into like television, like current television, but whatever, like don't hold me to it. But the first one up for Sarah is Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Sarah Michelle Gellar.
What are her four most known roles?
What would she be best known for? I think, sadly, that one of the best known roles is going to be Adventures of Scooby-Doo or Scooby or whatever they called it.
Incorrect. One strike.
Okay. I think she'll also be known for Buffy.
That is correct.
And The Grudge.
That is correct.
And I still have one strike.
You only have one strike.
I think because I do think it's based on a search algorithm, I'm going to guess The Crazy Ones, even though it's barely even out yet.
Incorrect. Two strikes, and I get years.
Okay, so I have two left?
You have two left. One 1997, one 1999.
Okay, Cruel Intentions?
Cruel Intentions is correct.
97. Oh, you know what that is? Shit. Oh, no, that can't be right. 97. That's not voiceover,
so
right?
So bad at this game, guys.
Nope, no voiceover.
Dave, the beauty is that everyone's pretty much equally bad at it. My sister-in-law doesn't know any of this stuff, and she's beaten me a few times. You just gotta guess search. 1997 is the last one?
Yes.
Oh. Shit. I don't know.
All right.
I think I know.
I bet I know, too.
Tara, what do you think it is?
Is it Scream 2?
It is not Scream 2, although that was also 97.
I Know What You Did Last Summer?
That was my
It is
one.
I Know What You Did Last
nice.
Summer.
Right, sure.
Nice. Well, awesome
3 points
game.
For Sarah on
Bring
that
it
one.
On.
That was a good one.
3 points.
All right.
Dave's turn.
Dave, yours is Steve Buscemi.
Okay.
One of these is a voiceover, I should say.
Oh, boy.
Oh, you know the voiceover one.
Yeah, you totally do.
Okay. Monsters, Inc.
Correct. That's the voiceover.
Fargo.
Fargo is correct.
Boardwalk Empire.
Incorrect. One strike.
Oh, that's surprising.
Huh.
Who would search for that boring bullshit? Not this brother.
I think that was the only things he was ever in. Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou? No, he wasn't in that. Fuck. All right.
Incorrect. Two strikes. Now you get years. 1992 and 1998.
Dave doesn't know years.
No, that's the thing, is I don't know years.
And with TV, it's tough, too. Because if they were on a soap and it started in 1959, you're zoned.
In the interest of moving along, I'm going to have to pass because I'm drawing a blank.
Reservoir Dogs?
Reservoir Dogs is one of them.
It's 92.
No Sopranos. The 1998 one is The Big Lebowski.
Of course.
God, that was really 15 years ago?
Yeah.
Told you I was going to be bad at this, guys. But do I have 2 points?
You have
two points.
Yes. Okay.
All right, Tara, you're going to get Kevin Spacey.
Okay. American Beauty?
Correct.
House of Cards?
Nope, one strike.
Yeah! Okay, Kevin Spacey. The Usual Suspects?
Correct. Oh, one of these is a voiceover. Sorry.
One of these is a voiceover. Is it A Bug's Life?
It is not A Bug's Life.
Shit. Okay.
Two strikes. Okay. Years are 1997.
Yep.
And 2009. And I'll also just tell you, you've seen the 2009 one.
Okay.
That's the voiceover. Whatever. This is non-regulation. I'm just going to say 2009 is the voiceover, and you've seen it.
And I've seen it. Oh, God. What was the first year?
97.
The Shipping News?
Nope. Incorrect.
Okay. All right.
Apex? Just kidding.
97 was LA Confidential.
Oh, God. Oh. Of course. Yes.
2009 voiceover, Moon.
Oh, right. Someone else saw
I
that.
I forgot that. High five, Tara. I love Moon.
Somehow that made his top four most searched for.
That's
I don't get it. Isn't that crazy? This is
all
why
right.
the algorithm is a fickle bitch.
Everyone see Moon, though. It's awesome.
Oh, Moon is so good.
So Tara gets two. So after one round, Sarah's in the lead, 3-2.
Yeah.
Ooh,
Sarah,
right.
Your second one is...
I feel like it's anybody's game.
It is anybody's game right now.
I don't need you to commentate. Just go ahead, Joe.
Sarah's second is Kathy Bates.
Kathy Bates... The real Kathy Bates, right? Not the skinny Kathy Bates. You know, there's two.
Is there a second Kathy Bates? Get out of here, skinny Kathy Bates.
I think she was in... they were both in Titanic, I want to say. Kathy Bates, number one is going to be Misery.
One is Misery.
Okay. Why can't I remember the name of the stupid late night movie, The Late Show? Do you know what I'm talking about?
The Late Shift?
Yes. No.
Okay. You did already say, like, before you started, you said one of them. I want to give you credit for it.
Really? Titanic?
Yeah.
Burke? Okay. Do I have a strike and a half or two strikes?
We'll just say one strike for right now.
Okay, thank you.
Oh, I see how it is.
Harry's Law?
Two strikes. Okay. Now you get years. 2002 and 1991.
91?
Yeah.
Misery?
You said Misery.
Oh, I said Misery. What am I... No, I'm thinking of the other one with the greasy hair. Dolores Claiborne?
No, incorrect.
Damn it.
1991
I got guesses.
Fried Green Tomatoes?
Yeah, Fried Green Tomatoes.
It is Fried Green Tomatoes.
And the other one is Primary Colors?
It is not Primary Colors. It is her last Oscar nomination. About Schmidt.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Okay. Fair enough.
All right,
Dave?
I'm ready. Yeah, let's do it.
Dave gets Amy Poehler.
Okay, in movies? Oh, but it's
not
it's
only
both,
a movie.
Right?
It's
movies
it's
or television?
Movies and TV.
Baby Mama?
Baby Mama is not one. One strike.
What? What? That's
okay, surprising. Parks and Rec?
Parks and Rec, yes.
No voiceovers?
No voiceovers.
She hasn't been in anything else. Zero things. Wow, Baby Mama isn't on there. Saturday Night Live?
Saturday Night Live is correct.
Yes.
Talk it out, Dave.
I got an 8 years.
Okay. 2004, 2007.
Ooh.
Asking for years gives you a voluntary strike, by the way. So now you're on your last strike.
Yeah. I'm out. Can't think of anything.
Anybody? They're both supporting roles, but not necessarily cameos. Slightly bigger
is
than
Is one
cameos.
Of them her Anchorman role that she got cut from?
Nope.
Oh. Okay.
Mean Girls.
Oh, Mean Girls, sure.
2004. 2007, Blades of Glory, which I never saw, so I don't know how big her role that is.
I wouldn't have got those. No. I'll get it.
All right, so Dave gets two.
Yep.
Tara, your last one. Star of Two and a Half Men, Ashton Kutcher.
American Pie?
Incorrect. I don't think he was in American Pie.
Was he not even in it?
Nope.
Shit. Okay, that 70s show?
You're thinking of
correct.
William whatever Scott.
Yeah, you're right, I am. Dude, Where's My Car?
Correct.
Thank you for that, Dave.
Damn it.
Jobs?
Nope. All right, two strikes.
Okay.
2004 and 2010.
Okay, 2010 is Two and a Half Men?
Nope.
Oh, that was he started in 2011.
I got a guess.
Okay.
She's out, right?
Yeah, I'm
out.
Punked?
No, not Punked,
what?
Although that would have been a really good one.
What Happens in Vegas or whatever?
No, and that would have been a decent bet, too. 2004 is The Butterfly Effect.
What?
Never seen
and
it.
And then 2010 is Killers.
What? Killers?
Which is crazy.
Over American Pie?
So, final standings of the experimental run of the IMDb game. Tara with 4.
Yep.
Dave tied with 4.
Yep.
Sarah with 5.
Sarah Bunting.
Sarah.
At last.
Congratulations.
Thank you, Joe. That was fun.
That is fun.
Thanks, guys. That was fun.
That is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We revisited the ups and downs of the quite unpredictable Primetime Emmys and made some predictions of our own in our fall show, Deadpool. We set ourselves up for some misery with our TV forcing circle hurt and happy endings for weddings and a funeral, minus 3 weddings and 1 funeral, was inducted into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Tara was the winner of this week's Game Time. David and Liz both earned themselves an extra credit. Cha-ching! For their submissions this week and get to dictate an extra hot, great mini topic for their troubles. If you'd like to submit something to the podcast, the guidelines are on Previously TV's Extra Hot Great Submission page, available under the More section. The podcast would not be the same without your submissions, so please keep them coming. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole. On behalf of Tara Ariano.
It's an honor just to be nominated.
Joe Reed.
Thank you, thank you.
And Sarah D. Bunting.
Best boy.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time, right here, on Extra Hot Great.
Thank you so much. I gotta go. Bye.
Atta girl.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.